It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's got that right. We are living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. And we're live on Twitch TV. So if you want to see our beautiful faces this morning, or maybe beautiful might be pushing it. Average looking threesome we are this morning. I am your host, Jeff Paul, here. Couple days after Thanksgiving, still feeling that Thanksgiving dinner, by the way. Our good friend Austin Danforth, my co-host, usually is on location at the Big House in Michigan, where Ohio State and Michigan play today. A big, huge game in college football today. He's going to join us later to talk about that. So filling in for Austin is our good friend from WVMT, one of the hosts of The Morning Drive, one of my great friends. I look forward to this every time he's on with me, Kurt Wright. What's happening, Kurt?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's great to see both you and Aaron, and I appreciate the invite always.
Aaron, nice job this morning as well. I thought you were a very good voice this morning with the sports update, so well done. Excellent job.
Thank you very much.
Everybody have a good Thanksgiving. Was it beautiful? Was it wonderful? Did you have a lot of good fun?
We had just a small gathering at our house, but yeah, it was good. It was got my fill of turkey, and I'm still getting my fill of turkey.
Yep.
Hot turkey sandwich coming up for lunch today.
Best. The best.
Then we get into the turkey soup. And by that time, I'm turkeyed out.
You're turkeyed out. You take a couple days to get over the turkey fix. I'm still tired from that meal. You see, when you go to my family's house, when I went down to my family's this year, it was our turn to go down there this year. And man, there's just so much food. And it was just all day. You just eat and eat and eat. So I must have had like three meals even before the main Thanksgiving meal. So I'm still feeling it. I'm still feeling that tryptophan thing. That they say, I don't know if that's like a rumor or something.
It sure seems it. You always need a nap after you eat a lot of turkey.
Oh my God. But I will say one of the best, and I don't mean to harp on my Thanksgiving, one of the best I've had. I had an opportunity, and as you get older, you realize you kind of get away from some of your childhood friends. You know, you move away from home, and a couple of old friends from high school put together this little get together the night before Thanksgiving, and I went home the day before Thanksgiving and had the opportunity to go to it. And what, you know, it's crazy. You know, I hadn't seen some of those people in 20 years. And it was like we hadn't missed a beat. I mean, it's amazing. I'll tell you, that's as I get older, I used to look forward to all the things that you normally look forward to with the holidays, like the dinner and all the things you get excited for when, you know, the gift piece at Christmas and giving gifts and the colors and all that stuff. But for me, as I get older, I realize reconnecting with old friends and being able to spend real time with family really is the most important part of the holidays.
It's always fun to see people that you haven't seen for a long time. Assuming that they're people that you want to see.
That's a good point. Yes.
In which case, obviously, you did.
Yeah, I did. It was awesome. And it was like, there was a couple people that are in that room that I had not seen. You know, it's funny. On social media, you're friends with them on Facebook, so you kind of see what they're doing periodically. But I had not spoken or heard. Sometimes, some of them, I had not heard their voices since I was in high school with them.
And let me ask you this. Did they look and sound the same?
They did, I guess, to a point. Some voices were a little bit different. That sounds really weird, but when you haven't seen somebody in 20 years and you bump into them again, like things just, you know, you change, you know, things change. It was awesome. But literally, it was like we didn't skip a beat. You just walk in this room and you're hugging everybody and you're hanging out with these people and, you know, you feel like you're back, you know, 20 years ago when you saw them every day. I love that.
Have you ever run into somebody who's come up to you and said, "Hey, Jeff, how's it going?" And you have no idea who they are?
Sure. Sure. I had that happen not too long ago. About 6 months ago, a guy came in that I grew up with. You know, I went to elementary school with him and I hadn't seen him since elementary school. And I had no clue until he told me, and then it clicked, you know. I don't think I'd seen him since he was 10 years old. I mean, a lot of things change from 10 to 40, you know what I mean? You know,
sometimes
you know,
a lot of things change from 18 to 40,
that's very, very true. That's very, very true. But yeah, I've had that happen once in a while, but man, this was just like, It was unbelievable. So, yeah, it was great Thanksgiving. It was a really good time. 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. We have a great show. And I failed to mention the Town Fair Tire text line, which is our favorite thing. You can text us as well at the same number, 802-655-6672. Big show. We're going to have Alex Abrami come on next segment, talk about the UVM men's basketball team. Tough loss last weekend. I believe it was last weekend now, right? Against Ryder in the championship down in Mohegan Sun. I don't know what's going on in that Mohegan Sun tournament, by the way. There was like two or three championship games. And by the way, hey, Mohegan Sun, if you're going to run a championship game for a team that may not be a Power 5 conference, how about you have in the middle of the day and not 9 o'clock at night? I mean, it was like under 100 people at that UVM Ryder game. Did anybody get a chance to see that? I mean, you think that if you want to boost, you know, a Power 5, a mid couple mid-major teams, you don't put them the last game of the night after a full day of basketball, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy, but tough loss for the Catamounts against Ryder, you know, but it does not put a damper on what this team has done so far this season. And there's still a team that's not healthy yet, still a team that's not really hitting on all cylinders.
Came another hair of beating Virginia.
They
last
really
year's
did.
Champs.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that.
Leading with a few minutes left.
Yeah, and played really, really well. So they're in a really good position now. Now they've got a big week coming up. I believe Cincinnati is coming up on the schedule next week. That was a game that we kind of all circled because we thought that with them losing to Virginia, the next big game against the big team is Cincinnati. So we're going to talk to Alex about that. And also some big news. We have a George Washington transfer just committed to UVM as well. We're going to talk to Alex about. So listen, that UVM basketball program, we talk about it every week. And I don't know how you can't talk about it because the excitement around this team right now and the news just keeps getting better. Another big time conference, another big school. There's a transfer coming to Vermont. That's big talk. That's big news around here, Kurt.
Oh yeah, yeah. Pretty no, they have stuff. Got a, it's an exciting team. It's a team to watch. It's a team to go see play at Patrick because the potential for this to be a really special team and a really special season and maybe take it to that next level, I think is real. It's you know of getting to not only winning the championship, but getting to the NCAAs and winning
and competing. Yeah.
I think they've already done that. I think they've already competed. Competing is a word that we throw around a lot. I say it's time to win the game, the NCAAs, and that's a lot of pressure, but I think they can.
Yeah. And I think the expectations that they're going to, I think that's why that loss to Ryder for most fans. And we'll talk about this with Alex next segment. But I think for most fans, that's kind of where you kind of get a little frustrated, right? And you and I can talk about this. You probably even better than me. But I mean, I've lived up here since 2001. To think that a loss to Ryder affects you now, right? Because we're thinking, and what we've been talking about on this show every week is if Vermont could win, you know, if they could beat Virginia, which they didn't, but it was very, very close. I think that was a. There are no moral victories in big-time sports, but I think you felt good about this team after that game against Virginia. If they were to go on the road and beat Cincinnati, you know, without this Ryder game, I think the expectation was, wow, if they were to run the gamut here, they could be in the top 25. We could do all these things. Well, I mean, where this program has come to say, hey, these non-conference games mean something now says a lot about this Catamount team.
It does, but, you know, we should the expectations get so high. We should never think that they're going to run the gamut. I mean, I think they have the potential to have a great season, but we should not be surprised that they're not going to. I mean, it would have been great to beat Virginia, but you can't expect them to go out and they were competitive. Well, I just used the word competitive, but they were more than competitive. They had a shot to win the game, and I think that shows a lot right there. Last year's champs, a huge team, Virginia, and we came within a hair of beating them and gave them everything they could possibly ask for in that game. So, you know, the expectations game, that's the one thing to watch is sometimes pressure can play a part in,
no question.
In that a team suddenly has these incredible expectations on them. So we'll see how the Cats, but I think so far, I think they've done everything that we could hope. I mean, it had been nice to win the game last Sunday night that we got squeaked out on 72-67 after thrashing
in the first half.
And also the game before, we absolutely thrashed Central Connecticut.
Yeah. And that was a UVM game. I think they were up 12. Vermont was up by a lot. They were in double-digit lead going into halftime. So Ryder definitely made some adjustments, and Vermont kind of got cold. But
might have been a good lesson for the Cats.
Yeah, you might be right. And again, the Catamounts still aren't really hitting on all cylinders either. These kids, I mean, the Duncan boys haven't at the played at the level I think the expectation is. Their Shungu hasn't been on the floor yet, so that's a big loss for the Catamounts. So obviously, we feel that this team's got a lot going for them, and we're excited about them. At the top of the hour at 11 o'clock, we had mentioned earlier, Austin Danforth is in Michigan at the Ohio State-Michigan game.
Wow.
And let's face it, one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports. Well, and I'm not just talking about, you know, Yankees, Red Sox. I mean, I would say, comparably speaking, Michigan-Ohio State in this country is one of the greatest rivalries of all time.
And no doubt about it.
Austin's going to be there. And you talk about playoff ramifications. I mean, you don't think Alabama's going to be paying attention to what goes on with Michigan and Ohio State today? Some big games today out there.
That's a great game to be at. That's exciting.
It really is. And he's going to join us live to kind of give us an idea of what it's like. I don't think we can, from Vermont... And I can tell you this because I've been to a couple big-time college football games. I mean, these are huge deals. I mean, the city's shut down, towns shut down. And when Michigan and Ohio State come together, it's just got to be insane to be a part of that atmosphere. I've never been a part of anything like that. I can't imagine what Austin's going to go through. He's going to join us at 11 o'clock to talk about that. But college football, the playoff is coming. This is like, I think next week are the conference championship games. I know Virginia knocked off Virginia Tech last night to get a berth to play Clemson in the ACC championship game yesterday. But listen... You know, we talk about this college football playoff all the time. I love the fact that we have a playoff. I think having four teams is just ridiculous. But boy, can Michigan throw a wrench into some things this weekend. If they beat Ohio State, all of a sudden Alabama looks like, again, they're going to get themselves potentially into this tournament. It could be an SEC almost. I think it could be four. It could be three SEC teams potentially in this final four. I don't know if the country wants to see that. I can tell you, I don't necessarily want to see that, but we'll see how it plays out. But big games this week. The Iron Bowl is today. Auburn and Alabama. We know Alabama's going to play without Tua, their quarterback that was injured a couple weeks ago. So a lot of things can still happen here. But boy, I'll tell you, and we say it all the time on this show, it would be a lot of fun if college football would adapt to a 16-team tournament. Oh my goodness, wouldn't that be something?
I agree with you. I hope they consider making that change. I think you're spot on that. And I just one more comment, just to go back to the Cats for
of
just
course,
one second.
Of course.
I think that... Since I never thought they were going to run the gamut,
sure.
I think that adversity can be a good thing. I mean, to face a little bit of adversity when you have a great team, I think you in a loss can come good things.
No question.
And I think that they can have learned from that tough loss.
No question about it. The only thing I will say about, and that's what's unfortunate for a team like Vermont, is if you said that about a Michigan State or a Virginia or a North Carolina or a Duke, you can say that and say that the loss doesn't mean much because it can help them down the road. All of these losses in the non-conference hurts them if we're talking about a seeding in the NCAA tournament.
Well, it's true, except that's if you really believe they're going to win every game, and I never did. I think those are games that can actually help them. Not to say you want to lose.
Well, I think, don't get me wrong.
I think you want to win. You want to win every single game if you can.
Right.
But I'm saying they can learn from that from those two losses.
You can learn from the Virginia loss, but the loss to Rutgers.
That
can
one was
hurt
more
you.
Disappointing.
I totally agree. The Virginia loss, I think you can take a moral victory there because I think they got a lot of. I think it helped them with the way they competed against Virginia in Virginia. The loss to Rutgers is a tough one though.
Every loss is tough. I think that one's a little tougher. But even there, I think they could still learn. They had a lead. They maybe didn't put it away. Down the hatches and put that one away.
All right, we'll talk to Alex about that next segment, but let's get to the Green City Garage poll question. I think you guys will be interested in this. I found this pretty interesting as I was reading some papers this week. The Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, phone number 802-651-9299. Green City Garage, the place to take your car. Oil changes, get your tires looked at. You want to change your tires. You got something going on with your car, you need to look at. Go see my boy, Chris Wallace. Nothing is too big. Nothing is too small. He is the best in the business. Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. This week in the New York Daily News, I was reading an article by, and I hope I'm saying this right, Manish Mehta. He's a beat writer for the Jets. And he wrote an article saying that the best quarterback right now, guys, in the AFC East is not Tom Brady. But it's Sam Darnold, the quarterback of the New York Jets. So go to Twitter at 101.3 The Game. And the question today is, the best quarterback in the AFC East is Tom Brady, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills, or Ryan Fitzpatrick of the Miami Dolphins. Kurt Wright, who is the best quarterback in the AFC East in your opinion?
Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous. So he was not playing that well. He had a terrible game a little while back. And all of a sudden, this is how the media sometimes goes crazy with this stuff. They, you know, he beats the Jets beat the Giants. I'm sorry, I'm a Giants fan like you, Jeff.
I was there.
The Giants stink.
Bad.
The Giants stink. They're pathetic. So he's come on, and the Jets have won, you know, three games in a row against pretty lousy teams for the most part.
Yeah.
And he has had a little resurgence. Okay, so we're going to anoint him now as he's the quarterback in the AFC East. I mean, come on. He's got a long way to go to even be talked about in that echelon.
And I agree with you completely. And part of me wants to say that Josh Allen is the best quarterback right now in the AFC East. When you see what he's done on this season,
right.
And he's multi-talented. You're talking about a guy who can beat you with his arm and his legs. I believe Josh Allen has the most rushing touchdowns of any quarterback in the league right now. And that's even with Lamar Jackson in the league, the potential MVP. But I think what you bring a great point up about the media is I'm not even going to say he's the best quarterback in the AFC East until somebody beats Tom Brady on a consistent basis in a big game. That's my point about this. Like, even these guys that are supposed to be the experts, they jump on the bandwagon with what they see at the moment. For me, the teams that are great right now in November, now that we're still in November, right? It's not December yet. The teams that are great at the end of November are not going to be the teams to beat at the end of December. I'm just telling you right now. And so we just jump on this wagon. I'm going to say Tom Brady is still the guy until somebody really beats him in a game that's meaningful, that takes the Patriots out of what they're trying to do, it's still going to be Tom Brady for me.
So it depends on how you look at it. I think if you look at it as just looking at this season alone, how they've performed statistically and how they've performed in terms of winning in the big moments, I think you have to consider Josh Allen because he's been really, really great. But if you look at the evidence over the whole career, we have yet to see anything that says that Tom Brady can't just bounce back at some point, or that it's not just his weapons holding him back. When he's been so great over his whole career, you can't ever count him out, which makes it really hard. But Josh Allen's been lights really out this year for the most part.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. But I will just say this, and we again, like I said, go to Twitter and tell us what you guys think as well, and we'll bring this question up later on. But for me, at the end of the day, we are so into analytics, Kurt. We are so into numbers.
Way too much.
We're looking at numbers, and this guy did this in night games, and this is what he's done. I just look at, situationally speaking, Tom Brady is a winner. He's been a winner his whole career. He's been getting it done every single day. His team right now has one loss. As poorly as they look like they've played, they have one loss with all those injuries. Until we see some consistency out of these other quarterbacks, these young quarterbacks, and until someone takes this from Tom Brady, he's still got to be the guy.
But especially to say Sam Darnold, after having a couple, three good games,
Sam Darnold,
suddenly we're going to start talking about him as he is the quarterback.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it really is crazy. But that's, you know, listen, that's New York media for you right there. All right, we take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some UVM men's basketball with our good friend from the Burlington Free Press, the brilliant writer, Alex Abrami. Don't go anywhere.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
We are back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. 802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. But right now, we're going to talk some UVM basketball with our good friend joining us now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line from the Burlington Free Press, Catamount Insider, Alex Abrami. Good morning, Alex. Happy post-Thanksgiving, buddy.
Hey, Jack. Hey, guys. How you doing?
It's great to talk to you this morning, Alex. All right, let's get right into it. Another win for the Cats the other night after a tough loss to Ryder. Where are they today in your mind?
I think they're, you know, you could, you know, the sky's falling type of mentality after the Ryder second half. But if you told me 8 games through the season, they'd be 6-2. I think any fan or even the team would take that. That's a pretty good mark considering the teams they've played. They've only played, I believe, 2 games at home, counting the Gallaudet game on Wednesday. So they've kind of been a road warrior team for the first beginning of non-conference. They had that real close loss to your Cavaliers. Nice win at Bucknell at St. Bonaventure. They won at home against BU. I think the question, it kind of magnified in the second half, at Ryder down at Mohegan Sun on Sunday night, was who can score, who can create something besides Anthony Lamb and to a certain extent Steph Smith. We haven't really seen anyone else really step out, especially with Ben Shungu still sidelined with that hamstring. So they need to develop more offense, more depth from their bench and from their other starters because they're just not getting much production outside of Lamb and Steph Smith at the moment. So I think that's the big question mark. We've seen them play pretty good defensively, except for the Ryder second half. So they're kind of on schedule there in terms of how they play defensively. They're only giving up, I think it's like in the 50s, and I can't remember, 57.9 points a game. So that's pretty good considering how things have gone so far. So, yeah, I think everything is, you know, there was a lot of hype with this team at the start of the season and in the preseason months from, you know, here locally and then, of course, nationwide. There's a lot of press for the Cats. And, you know, one loss is not going to define their season. One bad second half won't define their season. But certainly something to learn from as we move forward and as we see them go against Yale on Sunday afternoon and then they go to Cincinnati on Tuesday.
Alex, when this team is hitting at all cylinders, though, and I think it's amazing they are, and Kurt and I were just talking about this in the last segment, that it is pretty amazing with what they've done so far, and they really haven't played great yet offensively. I mean, do we expect more from some of these guys, the Duncan brothers? I think Smith has obviously had some moments of greatness. We know Shungu's going to come back. You know, Giddens, I think, is the presence inside, but hasn't been the finisher that we kind of, at least from a fan's perspective, expect him to be. When this team is hitting at all cylinders, what can we expect from the Catamounts?
I expect really great things. I think the whole getting to this, you know, winning a game in the NCAA tournament and getting to that, even that second weekend, I think that's a really lofty goal. But I think that's in their range. I mean, you saw them, how they played against Virginia with really just Lamb going off and not really much else from his teammates. But, yeah, they have the defensive structure to lock teams down, and they have one of the best players in the country and arguably the best mid-major player in the country in Anthony Lamb. So that can take you pretty far. It's just, as we know, out of the, you know, one bid America East, you got to get things done and take care of business in the league season and then in the 3 days in March. So really everything rests with how they do in league once we turn the calendar to 2020. But yeah, I think the sky's the limit for them. I think they have really talented players. It's been a slow go in terms of them scoring outside of Lamb, and even Lamb has struggled. We can get into that, but I think they have a high ceiling. They haven't gotten anywhere close to their potential, and that's not a bad thing. It's only, you know, we're just a day away from December, so I think that's not the worst thing in the world.
Alex, we were just talking about this before you came on, and I agree with you. I think there's a lesson that can be learned. I think the great start by the Catamounts, 6-2, you can't complain about that overall. We shouldn't focus too much on the negative because there's so much positive. But having said that, what do you think is the lesson for the Catamounts against Ryder, where they came out in that second half and let it slip away?
Certainly there's the offensive struggles, but I think they were out tough. Out-hustled, and that's not something you see out of John Becker's teams over the years. And I think that's the big takeaway, at least from him, and maybe from some, you know, maybe me and some other people, that they couldn't match the physicality of Ryder. Ryder was pretty athletic. They had some good size, and they kind of really threw UVM off on its offensive game plan and their actions. And then Anthony took way too many deep shots. I mean, he was 3-12 from deep, and some of those shots he doesn't need to take. I think if he trusts his offense, and he'll find better shots. He'll find his teammates in better situations. And I think it's certainly a learning thing. But at this point, we haven't seen enough out of the other guys yet to really gauge how good they're going to be in terms of offense. But I think once we get Ben Shungu back. Once they get Ben Shungu back, I think we'll get a better picture or an idea of how good this team can be, because he's been out pretty much all year except for the two games at the start of the year. And it doesn't look like he's coming back for this weekend, and there's question marks whether he returns by the end of non-conference and ready for the start of league play.
So maybe after crushing Central Connecticut and then leading at the half, maybe the lesson, just a little lack of intensity in that second half, and maybe just a tad overconfident.
I think, you know, you're playing with the big lead after already beating Central Connecticut State and kind of taking your foot off the gas and really not being able to re-engage because Ryder really really found something in that second half, and they really couldn't be stopped once they got rolling.
Well, let me ask this. You mentioned Anthony Lamb. Do you find that right now maybe he's trying to do too much with the problems that the team's having offensively?
I think at times, I mean, like you never want to call him selfish because I think he's really a team first guy, but he knows he's the best player on the floor on almost any given night. So he's going to want to take it upon himself to rise to the occasion like he did at St. John's, like he's done several times, like he did at Virginia. I mean, he's their best chance of going really far, but when he's not, he can't take 12 threes and only make three of them. Especially, and it's not just the missing nine of them. It's the spots on the floor that he was taking them. That some were deep, some were where he's covered, and we've seen him make those type of threes. But when they're not falling, it results in a bad offensive possession.
All right, so Yale's coming to town Sunday. I mean, what can we expect to see out of them, and how does UVM match up with Yale?
Historically, it's been a really good matchup the last few years, and it's fallen in UVM's favor. I think UVM's won the last three matchups, and Lamb is figured to be the high scorer for the Cats in each of those three games. Last year, he hit, at that point, a career-high 34, and then I think he went on not that long after to hit 42 against St. Bonnie's. So he rises to the occasion against Yale. I think they were picked third in the Ivies this season. They're the defending champs, so I think they're pretty good. They beat Bucknell by 20 recently, so it's going to take UVM, getting back on track in terms of defense, in terms of intensity, in terms of overpowering the opponent, at least matching the physicality to win on the road.
Alex, around the country with every team, and I can even speak for the defending champions, I mean, Virginia is shooting an abysmal percentage from three-point. A lot of schools are right now. Do you think a lot of that has to do with the fact they pushed that line back a little bit?
Yeah, so it's back like a little over a foot, I think, to like the international distance. And I think that's we've had some conversations with that in our media sessions with a couple of the players. And I don't know if it's, like, I don't know if the distance itself is affecting them. I think it's just the spacing on the floor and the rhythm kind of throws them off because they're deeper than they think they are. So I think that's playing into it, because you look at UVM, they're at the bottom of 350 teams in the country. They're at 26.7% for the year. Lamb is at 25%. So, I mean, it's pretty dismal. But I think maybe we see a larger sample size, by league season. Maybe that number goes up, and maybe players start to adjust to the deeper line. But yeah, I think it is we've seen enough now where it's certainly affecting the players, and I think they just need to get used to the distance and kind of figure out the spacing on the floor and get their rhythm down.
Alex, before we let you go, how important do you think these non-league games are to this team if we're going to talk about an NCAA tournament? I mean, I know a lot of things can happen, and injuries can happen, and losses can happen. And we've seen it happen with UVM teams down in the back, teams that had played a couple years ago that were dominant during the season and had tough goes at it in the tournament. But if this team does what we expect it to do in its league and wins its league championship, how important are these non-league games for a seeding going into that NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think, America East has been stuck with that 13 seed for a long time, and maybe UVM gets a better seed if they have a really good non-conference record. In the last few years, they've been like around 10-5 mm-hmm. or so, and then they go like whatever 14-2 or 15-1 or even 16-0 from a couple years ago, and they get slapped with that 13 seed. But maybe history helps them if they have a great non-conference. They run the table or get close to running the table in league play, and then they advance to the tournament. And maybe the recent history of UVM being in the big dance, maybe that helps, and they get a better seed. But they got to take care of business over this next month. They have a nice slate of home games in December, and then they need to play like the defending champs in the league season.
Alex, we talked about the offense. What about the defense? How's the defense looking? Or how are they looking defensively?
Becker's group always play tough man defense. They throw in some zone. But I think they have guys that are bought in. Players like you said, Giddens is not the offensive plus that we maybe come to expect or thought we would get at the start of the year, but he's really good on the defensive end. He can change opponents' shots. He can clearly get a rebound over anyone, and I think that's a big plus for them, having that size and that athleticism inside. And then outside of that, most of the players are really good on-ball defenders. I think they will get even better because Ben Shungu is arguably the best on-ball defender on the team. So once he comes back, that makes them even better. So I don't think we have to worry about the defense. I think the second half at Ryder is an aberration.
So more good news, and we're going to let you, we only have a minute left or so with you, but George Washington's got a transfer coming to UVM, Justin, if I say it right, Missoula. What kind of player is this kid?
From what I hear, he's kind of like Robin Duncan on UVM, so he's got some size and can run the point. It looks like he has a bit of a scorer's touch. He averaged almost 9 points a game last year as a sophomore. And I think you're getting a leader, too, because he was a captain or a tri-captain as a sophomore last year in GW. So that's,
wow.
That's saying something when you're a sophomore. I don't know why he's leaving. I can only guess that. Or surmise that, with the coaching change, maybe things didn't work out and you wanted to move on. But I don't know the details of why he decided to leave, early in his junior season.
In a matter of 6 months, they've got a transfer from Alabama, Oklahoma State, and now George Washington. They're doing something right at UVM.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, Alex, thanks so much for the time this morning, buddy. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right. Happy holidays.
All right. And listen, it's exciting time to be a UVM Catamount fan. And obviously, there's always a little bit of things that you can improve on. But the loss to Ryder's a tough one. But I'll tell you what, you beat Yale tomorrow at home and you got a real chance. You get yourself back feeling good. You beat it. You beat an Ivy League school, getting ready to go on the road next week to play Cincinnati. It's a big game tomorrow night at Patrick. So get over there and watch them. I know it's supposed to be kind of snowy the next couple days. Put on your boots, head out to Patrick and root on those Catamounts. You know what I mean? Big time this weekend. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little NFL. Talk a little bit about our poll question. And last week, we had a pretty good debate about the Cowboys. I think I was right. We'll talk about that when I get back.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
As usual, I have one big mistake, a week here. Maybe sometimes more than one. But the Catamounts are not at home tomorrow against Yale. They're at Yale. So do not go out in that snowstorm and, try to go to the game because I'm wrong. They're
Thank
at
you, Aaron,
Yale.
Because I was going to be headed to Patrick tomorrow.
Yeah. I thought for sure.
Where's the game?
I thought the game was at home. I apologize for that, folks. The UVM Catamounts are on the road again at Yale tomorrow. Tomorrow. So big game tomorrow. So root them on, but they're not going to be at Patrick. So I do apologize about that. So let's go for a little NFL talk. Our question today was, who is the best quarterback in the AFC East? Tom Brady, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, or Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'll look at where we're at in a minute, but we did get a text on the text line. Jason from Williston said, Brady is a shell of himself and is being carried. Nobody is saying he isn't the most accomplished quarterback in the East, but he isn't currently the best. I can see where you're coming from and what you're saying there. But again, I just look at the intangibles that Brady brings. He's a winner. And until I see a quarterback in that division as consistent as he is, and a guy that finds a way to win. And again, I'm not looking at stats or numbers. I'm just looking at what he brings to the table. I still think if I had to pick one guy to win a game for me, Tom Brady's still my guy, Kurt. Still my guy.
No, I can't disagree with that. He's the all-time clutch quarterback, and I understand what the person who just texted said. That's a fair point in that we're not talking about his body work over his entire career, but still, separate out just the stats, and he still is, until proven otherwise, I think he still is the premier quarterback that you want in a big game.
And I will say that he's also playing with a diminished wide receiving core. I mean, a lot of his guys are banged up. His offensive line has been banged up all season.
Where's Antonio Brown when you need him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And he's still finding a way to win these football games against good football teams. I mean, again, he hasn't been perfect, and we know that he's obviously a 40-plus quarterback now, and we understand he's not who he was. But to me, I think I would still take – if somebody said to me, pick one quarterback in the AFC East that you need to win a game – I think Tom Brady'd still be my guy. I mean, and I love what I see to Josh Allen. I'm not a big Sam Darnold guy. I'm just not. He's not consistent enough, and I don't think he's been consistent enough against good teams for me to say this guy's right. Getting ready to take over the AFC East. But Brady's still the guy to me.
I am hearing your talk about stats versus eye test. And yes. I agree, especially with quarterbacks. But my issue with Brady has been that my eye test is telling me his accuracy is waning as well as his strength, which is concerning because that was something that happened to Peyton Manning at the end, and it got really ugly really fast. I'm hoping that he turns it around as a Pats fan. I am hoping that it's less of that and that it is something to do with the personnel around him. But I can't really put him ahead of a guy like Josh Allen who's been on fire if I'm going to see Tom Brady, one of the most accurate quarterbacks of all time, lose his accuracy.
That's Brady fair. Is 42?
Yeah, it might be almost 43, I think.
So, I mean, and we may find this out. I think Jeff and I are agreeing that until dethroned, he is the guy.
Right.
But he could get dethroned. I mean, there's no question because at some point, even Tom Brady's human.
Father Time
wins. Will catch up to you at some point, yeah. And it can happen all of a sudden. He is 42, and you know he has shown some cracks in the armor. So we will have to, I think we will be keeping an eye on that.
Last week we talked about the Cowboys going into a huge game for them against the New England Patriots. Patriots won that game, a kind of an ugly football game all around, kind of a defensive struggle in that one. The Cowboys then turned around and played on Thanksgiving Day after Jerry Jones comes out and kind of puts the hammer down and says, coaching's got to be better. Players got to be better. We have to win this game. And Buffalo goes into Dallas and manhandles the Cowboys in Dallas. And now all the fingers seem to be going at Jason Garrett. But my question now about the Cowboys is, are the Cowboys really as good as we've been sold that they are? You know, I mean, you know, when you put on the television, you look at all the pregame shows, there's ex-Cowboys everywhere. When you put on Fox, it's Jimmy Johnson, right? When you put on, Troy Aikman's doing all the big games of the week. If you put on the NFL Network, you got Michael Irvin right there. I mean, the Cowboys are in front of us all the time, and they are the brand, right? I mean, I think when you look at the NFL, the Cowboys, you know, people joke about they're not America's team. And I know there are a lot of people that can't stand the Cowboys, but I will say they are still the team that you kind of look at. I think they are still the standard bearer of the league wants the Cowboys to be great. I think the NFL believes that the league's better when the Cowboys are great. But have we been sold kind of a some goods that aren't really there? I mean, because to me, I'm not sure Dak is the guy. I don't know if you can put it on Jason Garrett as much because I guess when you look at the team that doesn't come out and win, and defensively they're playing, they're supposed to be elite defensively. They've looked porous defensively. They look terrible against Buffalo, my goodness. And Dak Prescott's looked fairly average. This is a 500 football team, and everyone tells us they're supposed to be great. Is it Jason Garrett? Or are they just not as good?
I think that coaching staff does deserve a lot of the blame. I think they make weak and cowardly decisions in important moments of the game. But that defense also has really struggled since Van Der Esch went out, and that has hurt them immensely.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. But for a team that's supposed to have the pass rush that they do, a team that's supposed to have the offensive line that they do, a team that boasts the running back that we think is this elite running back, and the quarterback, Dak Prescott, that's supposed to be the next guy, I mean, you got Amari Cooper on that football team. Maybe, you know, maybe the Raiders knew something when they traded Amari Cooper to Dallas. I mean, this football team, to me, just doesn't have it. And I don't know if it's the coach's fault because maybe they do have talent, or we've been sold every year that the Cowboys are back and they just never seem to be back, Kurt.
So I think that it's both. I mean, when you have an underperforming team like this, it's on the players, but it is, you know, let's face it, the coaches also have to take responsibility. They're 6-6. They're 6-6 in the NFC East, the worst division in football, which is embarrassing to me because it was always one of the best. That the combined record in that division is 15-30. And the Cowboys have been playing some of those teams. Some of those wins have come against those teams. Against the Patriots, the Cowboys actually played a pretty good game. And in fact, again, this is one of the coaching decisions. I was watching that game, and here they have 4th-and-7 or whatever it was inside the 10-yard line. And to me, and I know that Aikman was saying this as well, and I completely agree with him, you got to go for that right there.
Yeah.
Because if you have, are you going to get an opportunity? They were down to like 5 or 6 minutes left. How do you know you're going to get an opportunity to be that close to the touchdown and get a chance to go in? You got to go for the chance to tie it up right then and there. And if you don't make it, then you still have the Patriots pinned deep. You don't just give the ball back to Brady and take the chance that what happened? I mean, the Patriots didn't come back and score, but they ran the clock way down. The Cowboys had to use all their timeouts left, and that was a key coaching decision that was, I think, a really dumb move.
Because really in that game, that was the first time they had rolled on the Pats the entire game. That's the first time that defense had faltered. And if they don't take advantage of it there, you might not get the shot again. And they didn't.
You got to go for it right there.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join us today, or text us in the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 655-6672. But again, that's one move. And the Cowboys had the ball late. And if it wasn't for some people would say terrible tripping call that was called against Dallas, they're driving there. I don't know if you can put it all on Jason Garrett. I don't know if you can. Now, I look at it as the players aren't making plays. I mean, I watched the game against Buffalo, and Dak Prescott he's missing throws that you can't miss if you're going to be a winning quarterback in this league, and the defense just isn't doing the job. I mean, when you're not doing the job on both ends of the ball, I know the coach, it seems to fall on the coach, but my question is, like, Are they underperforming because of Jason Garrett and the coaching staff, or are they just not as good as we think that they are? We keep getting sold that the Cowboys are it. We keep getting told that Dak Prescott's the next great when he's on all the commercials. We see his face everywhere. Are they just not as good as we think they are?
Well, it's why I said it's on both, because the bottom line is, and I think Garrett is not going to be long for the Cowboys. I think Jones is going to get rid of him fairly soon, and the reality is, you're not going to fire most of the team. You're going to fire the coach.
Right.
And so is it all his fault? No. But I think Jones is clearly very unhappy with him. And I think it's probably that one coaching decision is an exclamation point, I think, on some other bad decisions as well. It's not the only one. That, to me, was the exclamation point of weak coaching. And so I think he's going to bear the brunt of this. Not all his fault. Obviously, players haven't performed. But you know what? The coach has to get them up for these games and have them motivated, and they don't appear to be so.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that they're not, you know, especially in a division like the NFC East, where you can win it by 8-8 might win it, 9-7 might win it. And you look at the way Dallas is not, for the record, Dallas has not won a game against a team that's above 500. They blew out Philadelphia. I think they're a better team than Philadelphia, so they're probably still going to win this division. And you wonder if this team, if they do get into the playoffs, can make a run. I guess the biggest question now is for Dallas Cowboy fans. Let's say what we think is going to happen happens. And I believe that they're going to win that division, because I don't think Philadelphia is very good either. I think Philadelphia will lose to them, and the Cowboys will end up winning that division. If they win a game in the playoffs, or say two games in the playoffs, if it happens, do you keep Jason Garrett now? I mean, Jerry Jones is committed. He's not going to get rid of if he didn't fire him after the other day, he's not going to fire him till the end of the season. What happens if this team wins a game or two in the playoffs, if they get in, if they get hot? We talk about that sometimes the best team in the NFL isn't the best team in November. The best team may be a team you haven't heard of. That's why I think Minnesota's going to the Super Bowl. I think they're the best team in the NFC. But the best team may not show up until end of December.
We'll see if they get past the wild card game with Seattle.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, they probably, you don't look at them and think right now they won't, that they will get by. But if they do get if Dallas ends up winning a game in the playoffs, do you look at Jason Garrett and say, well, you want a playoff game, we'll try this again? Would Cowboy fans be into that?
First of all, I wouldn't totally dismiss the Eagles. Not a very good team, but the Eagles have a very weak schedule left. And, you know, the way the Cowboys have been falling apart, I would not totally dismiss. I'd say it's unlikely,
right?
But I would not totally dismiss that the Eagles end up passing them. That's how bad it's going for the Cowboys.
No, I mean, it's very possible. And again, you've got two average football teams right there, in my opinion. But when you look at the Eagles are having trouble moving the ball on anybody. But their defense is good.
If you've got a defensive team, it can keep you in the game.
Very, very true. So if the Eagles do get on, fine. But I guess my question is, if Dallas wins this division, gets into the playoffs, wins a playoff game, and how many playoff games has Dallas won in the last 20 years?
Just about none.
None, right? So if he wins a playoff game, you know, do the Cowboys reevaluate this? Say, oh, he got the team back on track. We talked about the injury to the linebacker. You know, they hadn't played up to form, but they got to the playoffs and won a game. All of a sudden, does Jason Garrett keep his job? Is Jerry Jones missing the window to fire him right now at where the Cowboys look like they're at their lowest? Is this the time to do it, or do you wait and roll the dice that... You know, I think
Jerry Jones is ready to go in a different direction, and I think he's going in a different direction unless they do something incredible. So I think it's going to take something incredible to save Garrett's neck.
Sorry, Nick, former sales guy, says we've won one. So they won one playoff game. What game was? I'm trying to remember what playoff game that was.
That's why I said almost none.
It was either last year or the year before they finally broke
their.
Did they win a game?
So they've won one playoff game in 20 years. That's what I'm saying about the Cowboys. It's amazing to think that a team that's on the pedestal like they are in the league, and is talked about as world champion contenders every year, has won one playoff game, and I don't have the stats around me, and in how many years? One playoff game. I mean, and I would argue that they were so excited to get Romo out of there. I think Romo was an elite quarterback. I thought he was one of their best quarterbacks. I mean, I think Romo's a lot better quarterback than what I see out of Dak Prescott right now. So it's just interesting where the Cowboys are and how they're portrayed in the NFL. It really is to me. I don't know.
I think Garrett's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think he's got to be, right? I mean, I just don't know what's the issue. Is it a coaching issue or is this a personnel issue?
I think it's largely coaching. I look at their roster and I do see a lot of talent, but they just have not shown what their potential says, what their roster says they have the potential for.
Yeah.
At all.
All right, we'll take a quick break when we come back. It's Out in Left Field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do you got today, buddy?
Oh, boy. Runaway pig squeals the spotlight from journalist on live TV.
Oh, boy.
I like that pun. That's good. There was pig news coming out of Greek morning TV on Tuesday. A large speckled sow. Is it a sow or a
sow? I think it's a sow.
A sow?
Yeah.
A pig. A large speckled pig took a liking to journalist Lazos...
Mantikos.
Mantikos. Okay, Mantikos. Got it in my head now. We were joking that this was going to be a big part of this segment is my trying to read
struggling
names.
Struggling with the Greek name, sure.
Yeah. Pestering him through a live broadcast as he attempted to report on the devastation to the beach town of Kineta, which was lashed by torrential rains on Monday. The key word there was attempted. The love-struck pig persistently chased a grunting and yelping mantikos as he ran in circles trying to deliver his report. As the viewers of Good Morning Greece watched, anchor Georgos...
Papadikas.
Yeah, announced that they were going to Mantikos for an update on the serious situation on the ground. Good morning, we have an issue, a breathless Mantikos said as they cut to his shot. Can you hear me? We have a pig here that's been chasing us since the morning. Sorry, guys, I can't stand because it's biting me. The presenters in the studio, unable to contain their laughter, told Mantikos that they'd give him some time to get his affairs in order. Try to repair your relationship. I'll leave you two to repair. Moments later, the feisty sow chased the reporter out of camera range.
I have to tell you, I mean, I don't know, has anyone here been chased by a pig before? Because I had a friend growing up that had a pig on her farm, and I went over one day and it was like a little potbelly pig, and that thing chased me all over. They're scary, you know, and they're fast too. I'm telling you, you don't want to be chased by.
Maybe it was just trying to hog the microphone.
You're right. Ba-dum boom, you are on fire. This is why you do it every day. See, that's what I like about you. See, that, you're a seasoned radio veteran right there. Yeah, that's crazy stuff right there. You don't want to be chased by farm animals.
It's not scary. Good to be chased by a pig.
No, it isn't. And they bite. Like they, you know, I think they eat anything, right? So, you know, maybe it wasn't in love. Maybe it was hungry. That's what makes you more nervous. You know what I mean? Was it a big pig or a little pig?
It was pretty big. It was like thigh high on him. I saw the pictures.
Jeez, that's a little scary. You got to get control. Was it just a pig that just happened to be loose?
It was just a pig on the loose.
Just a wild pig on the loose.
Yep.
Man, it's a scary story. Interesting. I don't know where to go from that.
I know my mother was chased around by a chicken once.
No, that can happen too, yeah. I got chased by a goose.
Farm animals...
A goose chased me once. I got too close to its babies when I was a kid, and it chased me. Got bit by that. Gotta be careful. Yeah, bit my finger.
Gotta be careful with those.
You gotta keep your distance from these wild animals, Kurt. You know what I mean?
There was I don't want to go negative on this, because it's a funny story, but there was a story about a woman actually got killed by some wild hogs recently.
I did hear that. That is a terrible story, but yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you gotta take these things seriously. You know, don't be messing with the wild. That's why I don't go camping. My wife always gets mad at me. I'm like, I'm not going. I don't want to do it. Like, you don't know what's out
there. Afraid you're gonna run into a bear.
Bear, snakes, anything. I don't want to burn any of that stuff.
Raccoon.
Rabid raccoon. You want to mess with a rabid raccoon? They can give you rabies. You don't want to mess with that. I mean, you want to go camping. I told her, so you want to go camping? I'll go to, you know, find a nice hotel someplace.
We'll go right there.
We'll look out the window. You can see the forest from there.
That's my idea of camping.
That's how I roll.
Nice hotel on the ocean.
Exactly. Or I got to have some like really nice big, you know, camper or something that I can get into. I don't want to be on the ground in the dirt. Too many horror stories out there.
I've done it before, but... Probably not going to do it again.
Oh, you've done the camping thing. Well, we all
camping
have.
In a tent. Yeah,
yeah. I've done it before too, but it's just not fun for me. No. I don't sleep. And
have you ever heard like Jim Gaffigan's bits on camping?
No.
Like, I wonder how offended homeless people are that we pay to sleep outside.
That's not nice. Anyway, all right. Take a quick. Actually, it's time for sports update time. What do you got today, buddy?
Let's go.
We are.
are where sports live. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh. 101.3, The Game. The Game, trending now.
Pig must have known that Manikas was making the bacon. What's going on, everybody? I'm Aaron Wells with your 101.3 The Game sports update. That joke fell so flat. UVM men's basketball takes on Yale tomorrow. Jake Marsh will be courtside with the call at 2:30 right here on 101.3 The Game. UVM men's hockey lost 2-1 in the first game of their two-game series against Arizona State. Game two is tonight. Puck drops at 10 o'clock, and we've got Michael Lear on the call starting with the pregame show at 9:30 on our sister station, WVMT. The Celtics lost 112-107 to the Brooklyn Nets yesterday. They're sticking around New York to face the Knicks tomorrow afternoon. Tip-off is at 3:30, and you can find the coverage starting with the pregame show at 3 o'clock on our sister station, 960 The Zone. The Patriots are facing off against the Houston Texans on primetime tomorrow, looking to advance to 11-1. Kickoff is at 8:20. Coverage begins with the pregame show at 5:30 right here on 101.3 The Game. The Bruins beat the Rangers in overtime 3-2 last night. They host the Canadiens tomorrow night. We've got the coverage on our sister station 960 The Zone starting at 6:30. This 101.3 The Game sports update was brought to you by The Archives, a combination arcade and bar that focuses on vintage arcade games, unique craft beers, and creative cocktails located at 191 College Street in downtown Burlington. Now it's time for Sports Saturday. We are living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. We're always streaming, so you can take us anywhere on the 101.3 The Game app or watch us live on Twitch at twitch.tv/1013thegame.
101.3 The Game. Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
We are back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com, and you can watch us live on Twitch TV. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. Austin Danforth is on location. We're waiting for his call. He's going to be calling in from the University of Michigan in the Big House, where Ohio State and Michigan play today. One of the, if not the big game, Kurt Wright, who's filling in for Austin Danforth and this week in college football. You talk about implications for the national championship. I mean, if Michigan finds a way to beat Ohio State today at home, and there's nothing that says Ohio State cannot lose today at Michigan. Michigan's one of the hottest teams in football. All of a sudden, those Alabama Crimson Tide, if they win the Iron Bowl against Auburn, they're probably in a position to be back in that Final Four.
It's obviously one of the all-time rivalries. We talk about Boston, Yankee, Red Sox, Yankees in baseball, and this one is an iconic rivalry that matches anything in sports, probably. And as evidenced by the fact that former coach Urban Meyer says his biggest accomplishment was going 7-0 against Michigan.
Well, and I think that's what Jim Harbaugh, I mean, talk about a big game. Not only is it a big game for Michigan just to win the game, but for Jim Harbaugh, a guy that was brought in to beat Michigan, to beat Ohio State, a guy that was brought in to win national championships, but number one, beat Ohio State. He hasn't done it yet, and he hasn't even been close. So this is a big game, and who better to talk to than someone live at the game right now? Then my co-host here on Sports Saturday joins us live right now from the Big House in Michigan on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, Austin Danforth. Good morning, Austin. What's going on today?
Boys, what's up? It's a good morning to watch some football.
Well, I mean, give us, I guess, the coolest thing for someone like us, you know, that's never been a part of this, something as special as Ohio State, Michigan. Give us an example of what it's like in Ann Arbor today.
I think we got to the campus area like about an hour and 20 minutes ago, and we've done a solid lap of the stadium area, and it's just parking lots and RVs and cars and pop-up tents and maize and blue, and then you got the unfortunate red and gray of the Ohio State folks, but it's just everywhere. Like, everybody's just enjoying some beverages, some snacks, and good natured and hopeful, and it's actually quite cool. Right now we're on the we walked around the golf course, which is adjacent to the stadium. We walked behind Chrysler Arena, which is the basketball arena, and went by the Big Noon kickoff set for Fox with Urban Meyer, Charles Woodson, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and then now we're on the campus of Pioneer High School, which is also next to the stadium, where they have just RVs pretty much, and just everywhere. It's just packed with tailgaters and, yeah, good vibes.
I mean, for and you got to figure for Jim Harbaugh, or for Jim Harbaugh, this is the game of his career, correct? He's got to get it done today against Ohio State.
I think the way everything is stacked up, yeah. Like today, you look, I think it was 3 years ago, 2016, when both were in the top 10 as well. That was maybe Michigan's best team he's had. They sort of built towards that, and then I think that went to, I was actually traveling during that game. So I saw the first half in Montreal and then landed in Vancouver and saw that they lost crushingly. And that was sort of the one you thought they could get the easiest. Last year was a letdown. I think it was 62-39, like just it got away from them. And you look at this year, the way Michigan rebounded since midseason, and they, you know, Ohio State coming off that game against Penn State where people thought they would roll and they didn't. I think the idea right now in Ann Arbor is that this is the one that they can, like, I mean, against number one Ohio State, number 10 Michigan has a chance that they can do it. And if they do, I think that puts this program in, like, a whole different frame of mind going forward. I mean, I think I think it would just be immeasurably big. I mean, it's been years since Michigan won. I think they've won once in the last 15 years, 16 years, which is painful to say out loud.
It's an incredible stat. It's an incredible
Michigan
stat.
Fan. But, yeah, if they win today, I can't wait to see what this town looks like after the final horn. It would be incredible.
Well, I'm just going to go with a gut feeling here. I say Michigan upsets Ohio today and ends that streak, just like LSU did against Alabama a couple weeks back.
Here's the thing. If Michigan does pull this off, then it's a perfect example of why we need more than four teams in this tournament. Because arguably,
exactly.
Michigan could be one of the hottest teams in the country, but with two losses, they're not even going to be looked at. So, I mean, it's going to feel good for Michigan fans to beat Ohio State, but after the 24 to 48 hours that goes away, who cares after that? And that's the problem we have in college football. Am I correct?
Absolutely. We were talking about this last week. I mean, if Michigan wins, they need like six other games to go their way to have a chance making any sort of noise. Like, they would need also, like, several teams to lose today. They would need Ohio State to lose next week. You look at, like, you'd need Minnesota to lose to Wisconsin today, and Minnesota would still, I think, get into the Big Ten Championship. They would play Ohio State. They'd have to beat Ohio State, but maybe that would give Michigan a chance to be ranked high enough to maybe sneak into that fourth spot. But otherwise, yeah, if you're looking at a situation where they could beat the number one team in the last week of the year, have two losses, and be completely irrelevant. And that's really frustrating, but I don't think that's on anyone's minds right now. As I watch people throw footballs and, you know, eat snacks and sausages and smell grills and drink beverages and just have a great time. So I'm completely immersed in that 48-hour experience getting in yesterday and leaving tomorrow night. So I'm hoping for the best.
Will we be seeing you rush the field at the Big House if they happen to win this game today?
If it happens, I think I'm sitting like row 20 in the end zone, one of the end zones. So I'd be close enough to get in if it happens. I don't know if it will or not. I don't know what sort of security measures there are. Last time I was here was 22 years ago when they beat Ohio State going to the Rose Bowl, the eventual national championship that year in 97. So I don't really know what to expect once I get inside the gates other than I'm just going to root like crazy.
Well, Austin, have a great time. Enjoy the experience. Like I said, I've seen a Yankee Red Sox rivalry. I know how crazy that is, but you have two teams that play once a year. I mean, the nature of that rivalry is just unbelievable. And I think when you talk about Michigan and Ohio State, it's either Yankees, Red Sox, Michigan, Ohio State, right? One and 1A, or I mean, is that how it works out?
I think that conversation is Michigan, Ohio State, it's Auburn, Alabama, it's Yankees, Red Sox, and I don't know what else comes close in America. I think that's pretty much it when you think about like quality of competition, relevant in the national conversation, and then also just local. Just how heated it is.
Yeah.
I'm rooting against the team in red. I'm rooting for the team in blue. When you're a Ohio State fan, it's that team up north. You don't mess around. You don't mess around.
Well, Austin, go ahead. You got to give us your prediction.
Oh yeah.
Are you going to go with the Wolverines?
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh God, yes. I spent part of the day I left when I was waiting at Montreal Airport researching, could I place a bet on Michigan as like an 8 or 9 point underdog, because I feel like that's easy money. So I couldn't. So I'm just going to hold on to that money and spend it like crazy if we win. And hope for the best. I think Michigan is poised for a big game. I think the way they played the last month and a half is as you said. I mean, they're arguably the hottest team in America the last month and a half. And I like taking that into the Ohio State game. I can't lie.
Have a great day today, buddy. Enjoy every minute. We'll talk to you down the road. I'll talk to you next week. Take it easy, buddy. Yeah, I mean, I would even argue with him, and it was getting loud there, so I wanted to get off. But, you know, Auburn, Alabama doesn't compete to Ohio State and Michigan. I think the Alabama-Auburn game is more of a regional rivalry that I think people in that part of the country really enjoy. I mean, obviously, you look forward to the Iron Bowl. You know that both teams, Alabama and Auburn, are two great teams. But when you talk about national rivalries, I mean, rivalries that withstand whether a team is good or bad. I think Duke, North Carolina in basketball is one of those rivalries.
Yep.
And I think Ohio State and Michigan, I think you could debate who's 1, 2, and 3, Yanks, Red Sox, North Carolina, Duke, or Ohio State and Michigan. And right now, Austin Danforth is right in the middle of the heart of the country where they love maize and blue. It's going to be a big game today.
That is exciting. It's exciting that he's at that game.
It really is.
That's got to be a thrill.
And again, you know, Michigan might be, if they beat Ohio State, and that's a lot to ask for. Ohio State's a very good football team. They're the number one team in the nation. We haven't really talked much about them. We've got to been pumping up Michigan. But since Michigan's early season troubles, they've been one of the best teams in the nation. And I think there's just something wrong. And whenever we talk about college basketball, I'm probably sounding like a broken record, but there's something wrong when you talk about a major sport like this, that if you have any kind of stumble earlier in the year, you're done from national championship recognition. And I mean, the rest of the games mean nothing. Bowl games mean nothing if you can't win a national championship. And this Michigan team, if they find a way to beat Ohio State today, they still he was talking about all these other scenarios that could happen. I don't see anything happening like that. You'd have to have so much craziness happen to get Michigan in this playoff when it would be so simple to have a 16-team tournament.
This gets you fired up,
doesn't it?
It does, Jeff?
Because
I agree with you.
You have a sport in college football that I think when you watch the major networks, ESPN, ABC, they put in front of you every week and they tell you how great it is. But even say a Notre Dame fan today. Notre Dame wins today. They're going to be 10-2, I believe. They have no chance. And maybe they don't deserve a chance. They lost to Georgia. They got blown out by Michigan. Fair enough. But if you're a Notre Dame fan, pick a team that's 10-2. Look at Minnesota. Lost one tough game to Iowa. They might be out. I mean, they're going to be out because they have one loss and they're not going to get in. I mean, to me, that's craziness. You have so many teams in this country that have such talent, to not give them a chance to win. You never have a Cinderella opportunity. And that's what makes the NCAA basketball so special, is that you have passive basketball fans that may not watch a college basketball game all year, but can't wait for the NCAA tournament because of the drama that it brings. And now you have a college football situation where, yes, we now have a playoff, but you got four teams in it. And if your team loses early, where's the interest? Like, where's the interest nationally if you don't win? Now, it's a big game for Michigan, Ohio State today, but if Michigan wins the game, what are you thinking? I mean, it is literally a Hail Mary to get in. It'd be like a Hail Mary with your quarterback's arm tied behind its back and a blindfold on to get yourself into a tournament like this. I think it's unfortunate. I think it's too bad. And the college football purists hate it. They don't want the idea of adding teams. You know, I don't know why it's so hard. Division 1A does it.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I get the way you feel on this. I think you're right, and I wish they would call you up and start taking your ideas here. You're right.
Think about what it would mean, like what people would be. Just think about it. I mean, like UCF the last couple of years was like the darling, right? Boise State not too long ago was the darling. They were like the mid-major team or the lower echelon team that was undefeated that you'd like to see compete against Alabama or compete against Auburn or compete against Georgia. You never get the chance to see it.
And now Minnesota's rocking up. It's parity. And parity is like a huge part of NFL football. It's a huge part of the NCAA tournament. The fact that any team has a chance that different teams come up at different times is a big part of sports, and they're just not taking advantage of the opportunity to capitalize on
that. You never have a UMBC moment in college football. You'll never have a Vermont-Syracuse moment in college football because they don't allow the smaller schools to have that opportunity. And that's the problem.
You're absolutely right. Now back to that rivalry game for just 1 second.
Of course.
Do you know who used to, well-known sports figures used to have a annual bet on this game every year?
I did not.
Derek Jeter and George Steinbrenner.
Oh, right. Okay.
George Steinbrenner is a big Ohio guy because he was from Ohio. In fact, he tried to buy the Cleveland Indians before the Yankees. And
that's true.
Derek Jeter, of course, briefly played at Michigan.
Yeah, he's from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
So he's a big. So they had an annual bet on this game.
Another fun fact: we got a call from a listener during the break that says the Michigan DC graduated from Norwich in 77.
Oh, okay. I think I did know that.
Don Brown.
Yeah. So that's right. He has a Vermont connection there. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, listen, great opportunity for Michigan today. Ohio State's got to prove to themselves that they are the number one team in the country. Ohio State's got all... the number is 8 or 9, boy, that's a big number for this game, I think. But, you know, listen,
I think it's 8.5.
You kind of feel like Vegas knows something. You know what I'm saying? Like everyone will jump on this Michigan and they'll make a lot of money down in Vegas. But
let's go Wolverines.
Hey, listen, let's see what happens. You know, it should be interesting. I'll tell you who else is a big fan of the Wolverines today. It's Alabama. I mean, Alabama, a team that is looking to get themselves in this tournament. It'd be interesting to see if they did get in. If Alabama does get in without their quarterback, if they can find a way to get the job done. You know, if they can find a way to win a national championship without their quarterback, that would be very interesting. But, but then again, it's the same teams in this thing every year. And, you know Clemson's going to be in. They've got an easy pass. The ACC has been weak, and they're playing Virginia in the ACC championship. And Virginia does not have the team to compete with Clemson. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
At some point, the losing streak ends, and I say it's this year.
You think this is it? You think this is the year they get it done?
I called LSU over Alabama.
That's very true.
On this show.
Yeah. I don't know if I see Ohio State losing today, but you know what? We'll see how it goes. All right. I'm glad you brought up the Derek Jeter thing. It's a brilliant segue, because next thing we're going to talk about Derek Jeter. Obviously, he's going to be on the Hall of Fame ballot this year. And I'll tell you, it's funny. I'm so new to Twitter. And a lot of people say just get off Twitter, but that's where I get some of my good fuel. You know, you read this stuff, and there are people on Twitter that are actually saying Derek Jeter is not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
You and Donald Trump are the big tweeters.
I don't tweet as much as Donald Trump, but I like to read this stuff. But I can't believe that somebody would say he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. We'll get into that next. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I mean, we get a lot of support for this idea of a 16-team tournament. I mean, even if you did 8 to start, I don't know why we gotta it's like, oh, we gotta go slow. We can't do it. We can't do 16 teams. Like, why? Like, just do it. It's like, we'll start with 4, see how that goes. Okay, that's good. Now we'll go to 8 and we'll see how that goes. Like, why? Just go to 16. You've seen Division 1A do it. Like, just do it. I mean, I'm even intrigued with Division 1A football because I get to see, it's like, oh, wow, look, you got the 16 seed taking on the 1 seed or however it works out. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you look forward to. Why not? Right, Kurt? Right?
I don't think you can argue that it's like the expense that would come from trying to organize it, because meaningful college football games bring in so much more money than they cost.
So what's the argument that we hear?
I think we've had a lot of big college football writers on the show, and they just say, they're not ready to do it, or they want to see how it goes for a few years. And some of the purists say it's not the way college football has ever been. I mean, remember, the college football champion used to be dictated by a computer. And they just they put the numbers together, and they told you who. I mean, you'd have these big bowl games, and you'd find out the next day that the champion was, the team that won. So be interesting to see how. I mean, to me, when you talk about this, and I look at Michigan as a perfect example of if Michigan, and there's a big if there. But let's look at anybody. Look at Minnesota. Look at Penn State. Look at Notre Dame. Look at any of these teams that are on the outside. Look at Alabama. One tough loss to LSU, who's arguably one of the best, if not the best, team in the country. They're out. I mean, that's crazy to me, and I think it just for fan bases around the country, if you want the game to grow around the country, I'm not talking regionally, because regionally there's no problems. But if you want the game to grow around the country, you have to expand the ability to get teams in. When baseball was struggling, they created a wild card, right? That kept That kept the country interested longer. You've got teams that are in the playoffs longer because
of
that.
You're making too much sense, Jeff.
Thank you.
Making too much sense.
The first person to say that to me in 3 years. I love that. All right, let's get to some baseball and some exciting stuff for you and I who are Yankee fans. And feel free to join our conversation at 802-655-6672 or continue your texts that keep coming in on the Town Fair Tire text line, like my buddy Jan from Underhill, who agrees with us 100% on this college football thing. So we love you, Jan and Jan Underhill. So keep them coming. But Derek Jeter's on the Hall of Fame ballot. You know, I think it's... I mean, as a Yankee fan, I think he is my Babe Ruth. He's my Mickey Mantle. As I grew up with Derek Jeter being the dominant Yankee, all the championships. And I'm going to say this with me being a bit salty on Derek Jeter as well, because when he retired from the Yankees, Kurt, I felt it was odd to me that he wasn't around anymore. It was like when he retired from the Yankees, you didn't see him at spring training. You know, you never saw him at games. It was like when Derek Jeter was done, he was done. And there's been some books written and you find some reports out that there was some conflict of interest with Cashman. And they definitely had some moments later in his career where there were some frustrations there. But from a Yankee fan perspective, I've always felt that Derek Jeter kind of just walked away from the Yankees and their fan base. And he is Mickey Mantle to me. He is Babe Ruth. He is Joe DiMaggio in terms of what he meant to the fan base. I just want to premise this as a huge Jeter fan. I do for the last few years been a little bit salty on how he's kind of handled himself before he was the owner of the Miami Marlins.
I hear what you're saying, but I didn't have that big of a problem. I actually do recall him meeting with some of the Yankee rookies the year or so after he left. In Tampa, and you know, it's when he became the owner in Miami. That's, I think, when things began to change, because he's really not a Yankee anymore. But I think the biggest thing here is, first of all, he is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
Whoever's making that case is wrong. In terms of his, I know they talk about his defense. That's what they're talking about. Guess what? I mean, I've read all the books on Jeter. When Jeter was scouted, he wasn't scouted as, they expected him to have some offense, but they were scouting him on the basis that they thought he was going to be a great shortstop, that he had great smooth hands, that he had good range. And the fact of the matter is, for many years, look, he anchored the Yankee infield for championship teams for years. Now, if you want to talk later in his career that he lost a step at shortstop, and you look at some kind of analytics, I don't buy into all the analytics on that. I just don't. He won 5 Gold Gloves. Those were warranted. You saw him make that signature play where he went.
He's made two of the most iconic plays in baseball history defensively.
You saw the signature play where he went deep into the hole and made the jump throw to first base. His defense maligned later in his career. He was an excellent shortstop. And of course, then you look at everything else. The championships, 3,000 hits. The only Yankee with all the incredible Yankees in the history of the Yankees. The only Yankee player to ever have 300,000 hits in a Yankee uniform.
Well, you guys are coming from like an eye test and like effect in terms of winning position, and that's really important. But if you want to look at his stats, 3,400 hits, career batting average of .310, career OPS of .817, which is well above all-star level. He had an OPS of nearly 1,000 multiple times in his career over single seasons. You can't really argue that he's not a Hall of Famer, even if you go look at his stats, because, I mean, I guess his defensive war struggled a little bit at times, but his offensive war was like Mike Trout levels many times in his career.
I mean, two things. Number one, the people, and again, this is you know, the talk on Twitter. I think the only argument you can give Derek Jeter is, will he be a unanimous Hall of Famer on the first ballot? I don't know how he's not. But however, I don't know how Mickey Mantle wasn't. I don't know how Babe Ruth wasn't. There's a lot of, I don't know how Hank Aaron is. I don't know how any of those guys are.
They should have been, but maybe that's changing by the fact that Mariano Rivera was the first time that he was unanimous. And throw in with Jeter's stats also, that not only did he have what Aaron just mentioned, but on top of it, he had something like 300 steals.
Yeah.
So he ran as well. He had 30 steals different years.
He had 14 All-Star selections, 5 Silver Sluggers. I mean, this guy is a legendary player. And captain of the Yankees. I mean, all that stuff matters. So two things. Number one, anyone, and let's just say this. You just talked about his jump throw, which was an iconic throw, right? When you think of Derek Jeter, you know, you think of that throw. How about the two of the best defensive plays in the history of baseball, with the one in the AL in the playoffs in 2003, I believe, against Oakland, where the ball's down the line. He reads where the ball's going to be.
2001.
2001, was that against Oakland? Yeah, yep. 2001, where he makes a play in front of the pitcher's mound and flicks the ball to Posada, who tags out Giambi at home and ends up, that was a series where they were down 2-0, had to make that play. And the play he made against the Red Sox, where he dove into the stands and made that catch when he banged his face up, those are some iconic defensive plays. So to say that Derek Jeter is not a first ballot Hall of Famer is crazy. But I will debate you on the fact that I think Derek Jeter, when it was over, was not around much. And for a guy that meant as much to the organization, let me just finish, a guy that meant as much to the organization as Derek Jeter did, as Yogi Berra did, as all those former Yankees, those guys came back. You saw them at spring training. They were around. Derek Jeter was never around. He may have come back once, maybe.
Oh, no, he did.
And I vaguely, I don't really remember that, but he is never around. His presence was never felt at Yankee Stadium when he
but
left.
But Jeff, he's owned Miami now for a few years. So that eliminates all that as soon as he took over the Marlins. He can't go there anymore.
But I agree with that.
But this is before Miami. But Jeff, wait a minute. He's only been gone for 5 years.
Two of those years before he went to
the
Miami.
The first year he was at spring training.
I don't know. I guarantee you. Well, maybe he was for a minute. But
the,
I tell
the
you,
first from, year he was at spring training, he was with, I remember reading the story about how the Yankee rookies were in awe of meeting with Derek Jeter. After that, it wasn't long before after that that he's owned Miami ever since then. So he was never going to be, I hate that he owns Miami because he's no longer a Yankee. But the fact of the matter is, he was never going to be there once he owned the Miami. So you're really only talking about one spring training. He was there the first one after he left.
He bought the Miami Marlins, was it a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Tops. No, but
he's been out of the league for 5 years. The first 3 years he was out of the league, the only time you saw Derek Jeter was his night that he got honored and the couple times he came back for the upteen guys that the Yankees retired.
Yeah, he was at every one of those.
But that to me is not enough. You never knew where Derek Jeter was. I mean, he wasn't a presence. And I'm not saying he's got to be there every week, but he just was gone. It was like he retired. This isn't just anybody retiring. I mean, this is in the Yankee pendulum. You think about the Yankee greatest players, you could argue he's on their Mount Rushmore.
I think Jeter just went away from, after having the intensity of all those years as a Yankee, he took some downtime to just be away from baseball, period. And I think he was deserved that. He if he wanted to do that, he was owed that. But whenever a player wanted him back there for their day at Yankee Stadium, he was there every single time. He was there for Joe Torre. He was there for Posada. He was there for Mariano. He's been at Yankee Stadium for every major event that they've asked him to be at. Now he's not going to be. But I'll tell you what, he's going into Cooperstown.
No question.
I'm not going to spend. I don't think it's not worth spending that much time talking about Jeter. I get what you're saying.
Well, I disagree with you. I'm not talking about Jorge Posada. I'm not talking about Paul O'Neill. I'm not talking about guys that are good players for the Yankees, guys that as fans you remember. I would say this if David Ortiz wasn't around the Red Sox a little bit after he retires. I would say this about any superstar player like that are iconic players. And we're not just talking about a good player. We're talking about an iconic player. We're talking about the Mickey Mantle, the Joe DiMaggio, the Babe Ruth. Derek Jeter's in that conversation.
I understand. But the reality is he's owned the Marlins for a year and a half, but he was working to be buying the Marlins for some time before that. So he was always affiliated with them. And while you're doing that, you're not going to be romping around with the Yankees all the time. So would I love to have had him be more involved? I'd love to have had him been a Yankee manager. Didn't happen. It doesn't change anything in his career. The fact of the matter is he's going in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm already planning on being on Cooperstown next year. I unfortunately had to miss Rivera's last year. I'm not going to miss this one. So I will be in Cooperstown next year.
Yeah, he should be a Hall of Famer. He should be a first ballot. He should be a unanimous Hall of Famer. I mean, what he did for the Yankees is insanely good. And I mean, and what he represented to baseball was insanely good. My argument is, I wish we would have seen him a little bit more for those younger kids. I would have loved to have seen him around here. And let me just finish. I would have loved to have seen those days. You remember the old days, and you remember this, and when he was coming up, and you watch those spring training games, and you got Reggie Jackson sitting in a chair, and Yogi Berra sitting in a chair, and Ron Guidry sitting in a chair. It would have been nice to see a guy that had the presence of Derek Jeter around more. And when you look back at Derek Jeter's career, when you listen to him talk as a Yankee, to me, I expected that to be happening. I'm not saying he's going to be at every game, but be at the playoff games, be in big situations, show up, be it there at spring training for a week or so or a few days and sit on the bench and be around these kids. That's not what he did. He may have shown up once, it may be when he first retired.
I think you're getting too sensitive about that. I'd love to have Jeter be there more. Again, I'd love to have him be a Yankee manager. I'd love to have had him continue his history with the Yankees. He did have a fallout with Brian Cashman with his contract. He was very unhappy with Brian Cashman. That was clear. But I to me, it doesn't tarnish anything with Jeter's career with the Yankees. The way he left with the accolades that he got, with the everybody wearing the respect hats for Jeter at the end, the All-Star celebration.
This takes
that he
something
had.
Away from his game, man. I'm not talking about this. Doesn't take anything away
well,
from.
Well, I understand, but
I
think you're overplaying that a little bit.
I don't know. I don't know if I am or not. Maybe I am. I just look at it as a situation where when you have iconic players and you're bringing young kids up to take that position, it would be nice to have those guys around. And that's what the Yankees have always been. That to me, that's what the Yankee organization's always represented, is that the guys come back. They give back a little bit. To me, when I think that Jeter was so salty with Cashman, I thought that he was just done with the organization when it was over. And obviously, you know, he's always going to be known as a Yankee. He's one of the greatest ever to play. I'm still a huge fan of Derek Jeter. Just wish he was around a little bit more. That's all. So do you think he's unanimous, or what do you think? Do you think he's not unanimous?
I think he should be unanimous, and I'm hoping that the writers have figured it out since Rivera became unanimous selection, that why would anybody make the case why you would not vote for him?
Well, one of the things
you can't make the case.
One of the things that has been commonly holding people back from first ballot voting, getting in first ballot, is that there are writers who feel no one should get in first ballot. And I hate that. I don't understand the logic behind that. Well, no one's good enough to be first ballot. You're either a Hall of Famer or you're not.
Yeah, if you believe that, you probably shouldn't have a vote. I would think that you can't really have, you have to go into this pretty open-minded and look at these players and say, you know, and we'll see. And I would say if Mariano Rivera is a unanimous Hall of Famer, I think Derek Jeter has to be. I mean, I think you can compare what Derek Jeter did over his career to what Mo did through his career. I think they're very, I mean, they're almost holding hands with each other here in terms of what they brought to the Yankee dynasty. I mean, they were both focal points to that. And I think if you looked at Jeter, he was even more of a focal point because of what he did for this organization over his career, how many games he played. I mean, what he did on the field was unbelievable. If he is not a unanimous, I'd love to know whoever doesn't vote him in, or doesn't pick him I would love to know the reasoning behind that.
I got a quick key question for you, Jeff.
Sure.
What is the mansion that Jeter lives in called?
It's down in Tampa. It's, I forget.
I thought you gave me the trivia question on
did
that.
Did I give it to you once? I probably did give you that. I forgot what it is.
St.
Jetersburg. It's in St.
I didn't get that right on my show a couple weeks ago.
St. Jetersburg, exactly. When they built this unbelievable, that was back in not too long. It was a few years back when he was still playing. He built this huge mansion. They call it Jetersburg down there. Yeah, listen, unbelievable player, unbelievable guy, you know, in terms of what he brought to the Yankee organization. And I can't imagine him not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I can't imagine him not being unanimous. But going into this offseason, we got a couple minutes left with the Yankees. I know how close you are to the Yanks. I know how you're a big fan, as I am. What do you expect? Do you think Garrett Cole to be a Yankee this year?
There's an article in the Daily News, I think it was yesterday, talking about that the Yankees are going to be making a big play for Cole. But so are the Angels.
And I hear the Angels are going all in.
The Angels are going all in. They've hired Madden now, and they've made clear that they're going to make a big splash in the offseason. The Angels have been down for so long that they're going big time after big players.
Yeah.
But the Yankees certainly have the money to go after him. My hope is that they get either Cole or Strasburg. I'm happy with either one, but I would like to see them come away with one of those two.
Yeah, you feel like the Yankees, and that's what the Yankees are missing, was that ace starting pitcher. And whether it's Luis, I think they go into the last year feeling that Luis Severino was that guy, but the injury kept him out most of the season until late, and he definitely wasn't himself. They really relied on that bullpen, and that bullpen was beat up going into the playoffs.
Too much.
So there's, well, no question about that. So they need to do something in terms of bringing in. It sounds like Didi Gregorius is going to be gone, so there's rumors about some big trade with the Indians that'll bring in Kluber and Lindor, and they'll let Didi walk. So I think once we get past the Christmas season and past the holiday season, you're going to start to see some things dropping here for the New York Yankees.
I would, if the Yankees were able to put together a package to get Lindor, they should be all over that.
Dan Mack from Essex says, stop it with Strasburg, zip it, he's a Nats boy. He thinks he's a big National fan, I think.
That he's going to stay with the Nats? That's his prediction?
I think that's what
that is the consensus, I think, amongst a lot of the analysts, is that he's not planning on actually going anywhere.
I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm saying if he doesn't, the Yankees should, because the guy has proven that he's a big game pitcher.
And it'll be interesting to see if the Yankees do make the decision to really put a ton of money in a pitcher like that, because they had an opportunity for Gerrit Cole. They didn't trust coming out of the National League. They didn't give him any money. He signs with Houston. Strasburg might be the guy that Cashman says, you know what, we got to throw the money at if they lose Gerrit Cole.
Well, if they do, are you worried about moves they might try to make to get closer to the luxury cap so they're not hitting a third year down the road?
I mean, I think the Yankees are looking at this like, okay, enough is enough. Like, let's just go. I mean, let's just be who we are. I mean, you got to spend some money. They've done a good job with their farm system, but you got to have the pitching to get and win a championship. The Red Sox have proven that. The Nationals have proven that. The Houston Astros have proven that. The Yankees got to get on board.
I don't think the Yankees have to go crazy in spending. I think they need to make one big acquisition. I mean, let's face it. They were in the championship. You know, they were in the American League Championship Series, Game 6. I think they've got the core of a great team there still.
No, I agree.
But they need to make a couple of picks. I think one big acquisition and maybe one decent trade, and that's all they need. I don't think you need to go crazy with it.
Yeah, because not having to play a bullpen game in that series might have been the difference.
But here's the thing. But here's the thing about this. You can't, going crazy is one thing, but you have to have a pitcher that can, you got to have guys that can go long. And again, these pitchers aren't going to sign for 3 or 4 years. They're going to want a big contract. You know how the Yankees are now with these big contracts? They're a little hesitant to do that. So we'll see how it goes.
Understandably, and they should be, because a lot of teams, including the Yankees, have gotten burnt by these long-term contracts. I totally agree.
But sometimes you look at it in terms of, if we have a lot of success with it early, do we deal with the back end of it? That's the question the Yankees have to answer. All right, when we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC, because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
My man, it's Hot or Not. What do we got?
This is Hot or Not, brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft's Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They do not disappoint. They offer over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are always made from scratch daily. There's no box mix here. Make your day superb.
And they are great. We brought some cupcakes in last week, if you guys remember, and they were just unbelievable. So do yourself a favor. Go check them out. I mean, if you haven't had if you're looking for something, look, we're going to get snow, I guess. It's kind of cold outside. Like, go buy a few cupcakes at Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center. Go home, get by the fire, and watch the big games today. Thank me later.
Their pecan pie cupcake from the seasonal menu had pecan pie filling in
unbelievable.
It was insane.
And that's just one of the zillion cupcakes they have that are that special. Yeah. So check them out.
Over 100 flavors. All right. The Ravens have dethroned the Patriots as the best team in the AFC.
I mean, not. I mean, look, the Ravens today, and I know people, you know, they're going, oh, Brady's failing and the Patriots don't look good. I mean, look, I've said this, like, just wait before you make these decisions. There's no way. I think the Ravens are a great football team. They've made great strides. I think when you look at them and they match up with the Patriots, you look forward to that playoff game if that happens for an AFC championship potentially. But if you're going to sit here and tell me today that they've jumped the Patriots, I just can't. The Patriots still haven't lost. They've got one loss. I know it was to Baltimore, but they only have one loss, and it was at Baltimore. I just still think the Patriots are the team to beat. Until somebody does it, I'm going to think that.
Well, that's a very legitimate point of view, and it's tough to argue with that. But I am going to say that Baltimore, the Ravens, have replaced them in the sense that they are crushing everybody they're playing. You look at the scores that they're putting up against people, 41-6 against other teams. They are just crushing everybody, including the Patriots.
Yeah, it's true.
And they're the one team that beat them, and they manhandled them. And while some people might have said at the time, I think Jeff did a little bit. Baltimore, so what, they won that one game, they're still not that great. I think they've proven since then that they really are. I mean, they have just been burying team after team.
Yeah.
And I think they'd be favored. I think the odds makers would favor them against the Patriots right now if they were playing each other. Of course, it would depend on where the site was. Right now, it would be, if they were facing each other, it'd be in New England. But there's only one game. I mean, I think I'm actually going to predict, and I was wrong on another prediction I made on this the last time I was on your show, although I had two other ones right.
Yeah.
But I think Houston's beating New England this week.
Let me just say this before I let you. I know you had a point to make. I heard the same thing about Kansas City last year. I heard the same thing about the Chiefs. They were the unstoppable force. They're blowing everybody out. Nobody can stop this team. And the Patriots went in there and got it done. I'm not saying on paper it doesn't look right. Like, what you're saying isn't correct. But until somebody does it, I can't pick against the Patriots. Until I see it get done against Belichick, I can't do it.
I think that's a fair viewpoint. I mean, but yeah. I'm just saying, I think Baltimore is a team for them to fear.
Right now, if you have to pick right now today, I think it's got to be the Ravens, and for a specific reason. The Pats are so bit by the injury bug right now. They have so few pieces on that offense. They're not the team that they would be if you went into the Madden settings and turned injuries off. They've got very, very thin resources on offense. I think if they get healthy, they are probably back to the best team in football, because that defense is on fire. They have the best coaching staff in football. But right now, you're starting an undrafted free agent at wide receiver, and your offensive line is shaky at spots. I don't trust them to beat the Ravens necessarily today.
Health is very important, and you're right about that. They are not healthy. Will they be completely healthy? Who knows? But the fact of the matter is that it is interesting that there's so much discussion about a team that's 10-1 like this, but you see them go against a team like Dallas, who is now 6-6, and all their basically their wins have come against really lousy teams. But yet Dallas was within a hair of upsetting them in New England with a different coaching decision and a different call here and there. It might have gone the other way. I still think even though they're 10-1, you do see some cracks in that facade there where the Patriots are. I think it's going to come back to bite them. And you got a 42-year-old quarterback, and Father Time catches up with everybody sometime.
With that being said, I do want to say I love Jakobi Meyers. I think he has way outperformed any expectations that you could have had of him. It's just concerning that two of our starting receivers right now are rookies, and the other one's an injured 34-year-old.
Here's the other sign that the Patriots are a little bit concerned themselves. There was talk about reuniting with Antonio Brown. There was actually a discussion about the reuniting with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you all make valid points. I'm just saying, I heard the exact same thing last year about Kansas City at the exact same time. We know that there are dynamic offenses. We know what Lamar Jackson can do. We know what Baltimore's proven. I think this is the best Patriot defense they've had in years, and I think this team will figure it out, and I still think they're the team to be.
And where I do agree with you is next time they face each other, I won't be betting against Bill either. Because that man can make magic happen. This Lakers squad is up there with the Magic, Kareem, and Kobe Shaq squads.
Oh, please. Not. I mean, you know, we're at the end of November here in the NBA. I mean, look, the Lakers are off to a good start. I think we all expected this. I think the Lakers basically sold their soul, right? They brought LeBron in. They traded all those assets to bring in the big guy from New Orleans. I'm spacing on his name. Their big center. Aaron, when you can help
Anthony
me.
Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis. And they right now are playing great basketball in the Western Conference. You know, but I'll tell you what, in a year or two, when this team is back to being a joke, you know, I mean, you're going to reap what you sow with LeBron James. But to put them up there with the Magic teams or Shaq's teams and Kobe, like, come on, not even close. Give me a break.
I agree with you. It's a knot. Could it ever get there? Maybe, but it's a long way to go.
Yeah,
long way to go before you start getting into that pantheon.
So what I will say is I agree with both of you. And my reasoning is the Magic and Kareem teams were pretty deep. They are like they're chock full of Hall of Famers, and they lasted. And then the Kobe and Shaq team were not as deep, but they lasted. And Kobe and Shaq are on a different level than Anthony Davis. So yeah, no,
I just think that this team is, you know, I mean, they're good, and in an NBA that I think is really watered down. I just don't think it. I think it's a different league than it was in those other eras. And
no comparison,
you know, not even close.
And the headline is that this is tied for best 19 game start in an 82 game season.
I think that is more to what the NBA is today, their record, than what this team is compared to other Laker teams. The NBA just isn't the same product. It just isn't.
All right. The Yankees should change their policies on alternate uniforms and players with long hair and beards.
Yeah, I'm going to say not. I don't think there's anything wrong with tradition. You know, I mean, I know that we live in this era of, you know, being yourself and letting people have long hair and grow your beards out. And, you know, I could care less. But if you're a Yankee, that's just not what you do. And I like the gray waves with the New York across the chest and the pinstripes with the NY. There's just something about tradition. And we just keep taking away tradition. You know, and we change things all the time because it may not be cool enough, or because we have people that sit in a room and decide what's best for all of us. The reality here is there's nothing wrong with tradition, and that's what the Yankees have, is tradition. Don't change it. It is what it is. Let's just go.
No, no, no. A million times no. That's a great tradition that George Steinbrenner put in place. I love the fact that when somebody's got a long beard or hair out of their shoulders or whatever, and they're talking about coming to the Yankees, they know ahead of time they got to go shave and they got to go get cleaned up. I don't care that other teams have their own policies and let players look however they want to. That's fine for them. This is a Yankee tradition that I want to see stay. I love the fact, you know, when Johnny Damon was coming to the Yankees,
he had the shave.
He had the shave. He had to cut that hair. I love the old story about George Steinbrenner with Lou Piniella. Lou Piniella tells a story about when he had long hair, and he said he said, you know, Mr. Steinbrenner, you know, our Lord Jesus Christ had long hair. And he said, come with me, Lou. He took him over to the swimming pool. He said, when you can walk across water, then you can wear your hair like that.
That is a great story.
I'm not going to try and change your guys' minds on the beard and hair because I don't care about that at all. But just imagine one series a year where the jersey is the New York skyline with like lights and stuff.
Oh my God,
like,
please.
No, it's like way. An away series because it's not no. like those grays are as no, special as the pinstripes.
I don't even like it when they do this crap that they're doing in the middle of the season where they wear these goofball things.
There is, I understand.
Oh, I love those player jerseys.
Where you're coming from, I get it. But there's something about being a Yankee is not about the name on the back. It's about the name on the front. And that's what it's all about with the Yankees. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with tradition. Like, tradition is
Don't mess with that tradition.
I agree with
you.
Occasionally
there's a tradition that you can mess with, like that one in college football.
Yes, you can change that tomorrow if you want.
A bad one, but this is, you know, it's like changing Yankee pinstripes.
Yeah. It's like Notre Dame changing like their football uniforms. Like, you can't do that. Michigan can't change their helmet. Like, Ohio State, you just don't change tradition. There's something about being a part of that organization and being a Yankee.
Well,
don't change it.
Maybe the Mets can put out a skyline uniform.
The Mets will do that for you. Trust me, the Mets will do something
Mets.
Like that.
Take it, Mets.
Ohio State versus Michigan is the biggest football game of the weekend. NFL, CFB, doesn't matter.
You want to take this one first, Kurt?
I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I think absolutely it's the game of the year. I think it is pretty much every year.
Yeah.
It's like we talked about. It's the iconic rivalry in sports, matching Red Sox, Yankees, and whatever one you want to pick.
Yeah, I say hot as well because I think it's got a meaning around the country. And I think more importantly, too, it's going to have national championship ramifications because if Ohio State loses, a lot of other teams jump into this potential mix. And boy, that would be a huge loss for Ohio State that all of a sudden would be in a big-time trouble if they just to get into the Final Four with one loss. There'd be a big debate there to see if they'd get in. So, yeah, you can say the same thing about the Iron Bowl today. Auburn and Alabama, that's got national championship ramifications as well. But I think if you're looking for one game, whether it's today or tomorrow, that you're looking to circle, I think it's this Ohio State-Michigan game. It's a huge game today. And our boy, Austin Danforth, is going to be there. 20 rows back.
Yeah. That's super cool.
Gotta love that. That's unbelievable.
What an experience.
Is that the first time he's ever been there? I assume it is, probably.
No, he said he was there when he was a kid, like 22 years ago.
Oh, wow.
His parents. Yeah.
I like this one a lot. The Buffalo Bills are a serious Super Bowl contender.
Hot, 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 and hot. I love what the Bills are doing. I think they've got every piece in place to be a real problem for somebody in December and January. When you look at the quarterback, he is playing at an elite level. They've got two running backs that can get the job done, difference makers at wide receivers, a good tight end, and most importantly, one of the best defenses in the NFL. I think this team, we talk a lot about the Baltimore Ravens being the team that's going to beat the New England Patriots. Don't sleep on the Buffalo Bills, my friend. This is a good football team and one that can go to a Super Bowl.
Absolutely hot. And does anybody know, have the Patriots and Bills, do they have to play again?
They do.
Yeah, they have one more.
And where do we know where it is?
New England.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, they did play.
First game was in Buffalo.
So I would just say, again, if my prediction comes true, and it probably won't, but Houston beats the Patriots in Houston and the Patriots fall to 10-2, they have a one thin, slim game lead over the Bills with four games left, with one game to be played between them, even though it's in Foxborough. Watch out.
I agree. I agree completely.
I was just thinking, actually, this morning when I was writing my update, that this is one of the first years in a long time the Patriots are at risk of losing the division.
It's not out of the question.
No, I agree. I agree.
Mean, I wouldn't bet the ranch on it, but not out of the question.
Yeah, and how fun would that be? When's the last time we've talked about an AFC East that was going to come down to the last couple of weeks? I mean, how cool would that? I mean, seriously, I mean, with all due respect, I mean, that would be, for all due respect to all you Patriot fans out there, and, you know, for the Buffalo Bills to have come full circle here is special. And I'll tell you right now, Josh Allen is legit. This defense is legit. And I'll tell you, this coach can coach. This is a real threat to the Patriots and everybody else in the NFL. No one's talking about the Buffalo Bills. We got to start thinking about the B-I-L-L-S. Doesn't stand for Boy, I Love Losing Super Bowls anymore. You know?
That Devin Singletary kid is incredible. Unbelievable. He doesn't run. He strikes like lightning.
And you have him with, Frank Gore behind him, the veteran behind him. This is a good football team, can beat you in a lot of ways. Watch out for the Buffalo Bills.
And Houston, New England plays at Houston. Houston's 4-1 at home. Again, I'm calling for the upset and make the Patriots 10-2.
Bill O'Brien does not beat the New England Patriots. It just doesn't happen.
Neither did.
I have never seen a guy that cannot beat the New England. Watch, his teams just historically play so poorly against the Patriots.
And that's always true until it's not true anymore.
Yeah.
And LSU couldn't beat Alabama until they did a couple weeks ago.
I don't know about that. I think that LSU game is less of an upset as with if Houston was to beat the Patriots. I really do. Bill O'Brien just doesn't have a good. It was
the same. You'd go through sports forever.
Very true.
Royals couldn't beat the Yankees until suddenly they did.
Yeah, we'll see.
It happens.
We'll see.
And I'd say it's happening this week.
We'll see.
Oh, I'm so excited for next segment when we do the poll results. I just saw the poll results. They're fantastic. That's hot or not.
All right. That's hot or not, guys. When we come back, we tie a bow on the show. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Right, thank you so much for filling in again for Austin. You're the man. I always enjoy doing shows with you, my friend.
It was a blast. Jeff, Aaron, appreciate allowing me to come on the show here. I always have fun with this.
And remember, you can hear Kurt every day on Monday through Friday, I should say, on WVMT, the morning drive with Marcus and Kurt. And we got anything big happening this week on the show?
Oh, there's all kinds of big
all
stuff.
Kinds of big
don't
stuff
ask me happening. Who's on, though, because I don't remember. I've been off for a couple days, and
my mind is
just pretty much shot.
Well, tune into these guys every single morning on our sister station, WVMT. It's the Morning Drive with Marcus and Kurt. It's a great show, and I listen to it every day. So, great job.
Once in a while, we played Stump the Chump, and I think you've even stumped me.
Well, listen, I probably stumped you once. I don't usually stump you very much. The Green City Garage poll question: a Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, Vermont. Check them out, Green City Garage in South Burlington. The question today, you could have gone to Twitter, and the question today was based on the article written by New York Daily News writer Manish Mehta. Jets writer said that he thinks that Darnold's the best quarterback in the AFC, so I put it out to 101.3 listeners today. The best quarterback in the AFC East is Tom Brady, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, or Ryan Fitzpatrick. Who won, my friend?
Oh, not Sam Darnold. Tom Brady won with 64%. Josh Allen in second with 32%. Ryan Fitzpatrick with 4%. And if you do the math, that leaves Sammy D with 0%.
Wow. Oh, what a shocker.
Really unbelievable. It's funny, but I read the article. I mean, he really put up a pretty interesting, he put a good point up on why he believed he was the quarterback. But I'll tell you, I guess when you cover somebody every day, you just jump on that bandwagon when things start looking good, and you kind of maybe you don't have the mentality to sit back and look at really.
And they have reason to be excited, and he may be good, but to start making that case after a few games against some really lousy teams, after a bunch of lousy games before that, not so much.
I did see him play live against the Giants. He looked really good, but I think Kurt Wright would look good as a quarterback.
It was the Giants.
You know what I mean? That Giant defense is not very good.
Wait a minute. You throw me under the bus there.
Guys, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. If you're still with your family, be safe out there. We are supposed to get some snow. We're Sports Saturday, who are every Saturday from 10 to noon. We'll see you next week.